This is The Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to this podcast at Apple, Google, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, or go to reason.com/podcast. And while you're there, check out Reason's other programs too. They include The Reason Roundtable, a rollicking discussion and shoutfest about the week's biggest stories with me, Matt Welch, Peter Suderman, and Catherine Mangu Ward. And then there's also the Soho Forum Debates, which is the audio version of the monthly Oxford-style debates we sponsor in New York City. Every month, two smart people slug it out before a live audience over issues such as cryptocurrency, immigration, abortion, privacy, drug legalization, buying sex, and the future of work. Now to today's program. The impeachment trial of Donald Trump is underway, and today I am joined by journalist, novelist, and memoirist Molly Jong-Fast.
Molly Jong-Fast. Like Kim Jong, not
Kim
like
Jong. Okay,
Carl not Jung.
Yeah, okay, so with memoirist Molly Jong-Fast, who is an editor-at-large at The Daily Beast, where she covers, among other things, the Trump presidency and politics more broadly. She's also a contributor to Playboy, the UK Independent, and The Bulwark, a website started up. What?
Glamour.
And Glamour. Glamour.
Glamour.
She's also a Budinsky, but The Bulwark, I was about to say, is a website started up by some folks left homeless, figuratively, when the Weekly Standard bit the dust a while back.
Bill Kristol.
Okay, well, and Charlie Sykes is like the big, yeah, okay,
no,
so
Bill
we
Chris
know what this,
boss.
And in this, the predator becomes the prey on this podcast, where as somebody who is going to talk over me with reckless abandon. Molly is also a formidable presence on Twitter and Instagram, and an increasingly frequent presence on cable news shows, especially ones on MSNBC, if you know what I mean. Though she is a liberal Democrat, she is generous and wide-ranging in her friendships. I met her via Twitter, actually, about a year and a half ago, and she even once went so far as to say in public in Interview Magazine, Andy Warhol's Interview Magazine, that had a story about her throwing parties on her Upper East Side apartment. She said that she, you know, she talked about how wide-ranging and open-minded she was, that she was friends with me, Nick Gillespie, a libertarian. So we're going to talk with Molly Jong-Fast about Donald Trump impeachment, the Democratic presidential race, writing fiction, and having a famous mother. Yes, her mom is Erica Jong.
Jong,
author of the feminist classic Fear of Flying. And I guess that's probably the book that mainstreamed avocados, right? It did for avocados what Portnoy's Complaint did for liver, right? But her father is also a writer of note, and her grandfather, Howard Fast, was a winner of the Stalin Peace Prize.
It's probably not the thing he would be the most proud of.
But we're also going to talk about Bret Easton Ellis, maybe raising kids, the proper role of politics in everyday life, and a bunch more, if Molly will let me get a word in edgewise on my own podcast. But first, hello, Molly.
Hi.
And thanks for talking to me at the Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. Let's just get started with the trial of Donald Trump.
Wait,
I think it's
important to preface, though, okay, just to be annoying.
Okay.
We are the reason why I feel comfortable being annoying with you is because we are actually very good friends.
I think so.
So I do have a level of comfort with Nick Gillespie that I'm not usually this obnoxious with people I don't know. So,
well, I think somebody like, I don't know, presidential candidate Marianne Williamson might beg to differ, who attacked you on Twitter. But I want to start with Donald Trump. Because the Senate started its impeachment trial on Donald Trump. You wanted Trump to be impeached. You didn't want him to be elected. You want him to be impeached, to be removed from office quickly after the first afternoon, because these guys are...
They're zipping
through
it.
I mean, like, you know, bankers have to work long hours now, but like if you're in the Senate, you work, what, like, you know, from 1:30 to 4:30 Monday through Thursday. But after this half day of deliberations, what do you think?
I mean, I think, the whole game is if they could get Bolton to testify... Imagine what Bolton has seen, right? But they can't.
Well, why can't they?
Because Trump is never going to allow it.
But what would Bolton say? And Bolton is a guy who liberals in particular hated his fucking guts.
I think they still
about
do.
10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Up until about 10 minutes ago.
Terrible.
And he's going to be like, oh, you know what, Donald Trump is gross. Donald Trump is stupid. Donald Trump has no idea what day of the week it is.
That all that stuff we know. And actually, that's not the worst stuff about him, I would argue.
Okay.
The question is, did he commit high crimes and misdemeanors, or not misdemeanors, but high crimes? And if so, can they prove it?
Well, he's charged, the article is abuse of power.
Right.
And so it would be if Bolton could absolutely testify in a convincing way.
Right.
Just like all of the other people on the neoconservative deep state intelligence all lied convincingly, going back to getting us into Iraq in the first place, or misinformed us.
Right.
And then all of the people at, you know, the director of national intelligence and everything. If Bolton can pull off a convincing thing where he says, no, I was in the room when Trump said, we are going to squeeze Ukraine in order to get dirt on Joe Biden so that I may be able to beat him.
I mean, the thing
is, I mean, because that, and even that, I think a lot, I know I don't really give a shit about that.
But you should, because foreign election interference is like one of the few things we have that we don't do. I mean, it's not
okay. Wait. I mean, the U.S. does it everywhere.
The U.S. does it everywhere, but yes. But, but one of the few sort of last bastions of American democracy is that we don't have China or Russia
doing oppo research.
Right.
And we get British people like Mr. Steele of the Steele dossier.
Well, I would say, look, I don't have a lot of faith in this process, and I don't think, I mean, I think there's a high level of incompetence. I would say I think there are some very competent people in the Senate, Democrats, some Republicans too. So I think it's increasingly more disappointing when the Senate goes along partisan lines. Like, you expect the House to, you know, nobody expects Jim Jordan to be a pro, you know, to do anything but what Jim Jordan does. But
Which is turn a blind eye to
crimes. He likes to ignore crimes.
Low crimes and headlocks in Ohio State. Yeah.
But a bunch of those House sort of freedom, and even the ones who aren't Freedom Caucus but are still, you know, well heard, they're all sort of not going to do anything. Okay, but,
well, I mean, you do have the, you know, the Justin Amashes of the world. I was going to say the Justin Amashes of the world. Right. Now you have the Justin Amash of the world. Yeah.
You have one.
So you expect a high, I mean, you have, you dismiss the House with the soft bigotry of low expectations, but then you expect senators, because there's only 50 of them, even though
some of them
most of them would, you know, could be in New York City police lineups and people would not be able to identify them, right? But you expect something better from them.
Not all of them. I mean, Cindy Hyde Smith. There are a lot of
I have
real
no idea who that is.
Mississippi.
Actually. Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. she was photographed in clothes in not Union, but the other one. In Confederate clothing, Confederate garb.
Oh, really?
And it was like not so even a scandal because it's Mississippi.
So it's the do blackface, right? You know, Ralph Northam. I love, you know, just yesterday there was that whole gun rally where Ralph Northam like declared a state of emergency, which I guess was going to be backed up by the Attorney General of Virginia, who also did blackface. I don't know if he's still in office or not.
No, well,
the lieutenant governor who was credibly accused of rape.
No, that was,
I mean, it's like, it's quite a thing going on in politics right now.
Yeah, not, perhaps not the best moment.
Yeah, the
Democratic Party. Yeah.
So, but in the Senate, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but like, what is the, interrupt you?
Like, there are some, like, for example, I believe Tom Cotton is one of the really terrible. And I actually think he is responsible for our little foray into Gulf War III, which never happened, because I do think, and I think we're going to, if any of this ever comes out, but if you want to go for a crazy conspiracy theory, my theory is that Cotton pushed Trump to do this so that he would have his support on impeachment. I think he would have had it anyway.
Really? Yeah.
But I just felt like with that whole Soleimani thing, I was like, whose idea was this? Because we know it wasn't Trump's, right? He didn't even know who Soleimani was.
Yeah.
So whose
idea?
But
you see, now this is why he's going to slip loose on impeachment, because we started off talking about impeachment and now you're talking about the Middle East.
No,
and you're engaging in Kremlinology, which really, you know, hasn't been seen in the Jong Fast family probably since your grandfather Howard Fast won the Stalin Peace Prize.
Oh, good. I'm glad you got that in there.
And I guess went to the Kremlin, right?
He got it in like 1953.
Did he have to travel to Russia? Yeah. So this was like peak. This is like the year after Boris Pasternak won the Nobel Prize for Literature and couldn't leave the Soviet Union.
We can't all get the Nobel Prize. Okay. Some of us have to go for the lesser prizes. Okay. All right. Yeah. The Nobel Prize. I mean, I have no Nobel Prize winners in my family. Let me fucking tell you. That thing's a total racket.
Yeah. Well, they suspended it last year, too, because
it's a scam. They won't give it to the Johns.
It's like
or
who's
the
who.
Fast.
It's like who's who. Like, oh, you've won the Nobel Prize, but in order to get the award, which is worth $1 million, you have to buy the leather embossed.
That's right. My mom used to always be in Who's Who. You and I are the only people old enough to know what Who's Who is. And you're very old. You're significantly older than I am.
Yes.
I would like to point that out.
Yes. I'm like Tiresias, the seer. When they ask me what I want, or I want to die, or is that Sybil? I can't remember. I remember when T.S. Eliot was publishing The Wasteland in installments. I bought the new Criterion or the Criterion every week, waiting for it to come out. But I don't remember it very well because I am so very old. But
I do think the impeachment, I think he's not going to be removed. Yeah. I think the trial is going to ultimately be a sham. The question, I think...
Unlike the trials that were held under Stalin, who awarded your grandfather with that wonderful Peace Prize.
I'm glad we can get back to this because he's been dead for like 20 years. But I would say, I think it's going to be a scam, but what the measure will be, will Democrats be able to use... Mm. This again, Susan Collins and Cory Gardner and Tom Tillis, because these are people who are going to, as soon as it's over, they're going to say, we're not Trumpists. Yeah, we're really moderates. We live in these districts that don't really like Trump anymore. And if Democrats have any sense, which they don't, which they usually don't, they will be like, oh, yes, Susan Collins is a moderate.
Finally, we can. She's the linchpin. She's the if we can get rid of her, then anything is possible.
I have to tell you that there is something so profoundly grating to me about Susan Collins.
Really?
I'm ready to see her go.
Okay. What is that? I mean, that she is actually moderate. And I say this as a libertarian. I have no use for almost anybody who's in D.C., in the House or the Senate. But Collins is truly kind of moderate, you know?
She's
not the worst of, from a liberal perspective, she's not the worst. And from a libertarian perspective, there
but
are
worse
people.
But she's
not,
but you're better off having a Democrat on that seat.
If you're a Democrat.
I would be better off.
So to put this in a kind of more strategic sense, then, like, you don't have any hopes for impeachment of removing Trump, but you think it will affect the 2020 election, not necessarily the presidential race, but like a bunch of these people who, I mean,
they've advertised themselves. Cory Gardner has advertised himself as a moderate.
Right.
He is in a state that is getting bluer and bluer and bluer. That's basically,
But it's still kind of purple, right?
Well, pot is like their big business, right? So already theoretically, they're going to be blue just by the fact of the pot.
Yeah.
Right.
You know
because
what?
Republicans
I would like
are...
to believe you, but you know what? Like a lot of, I mean, ask Joe Biden if he's pro pot.
I'm not going to even ask Joe Biden anything. But what I'm saying is,
because he would tell you a fantastic story that probably had
pot.
To do about his swimming trunks and how, you know, he lost the waistband, like the string that went in there. And his mother said, tie it in a knot before and then it won't get sucked into the shorts.
You know,
but all of a sudden, and then Chain Pop is hitting me with a motorcycle chain and I call him Esther Williams.
Thank God Corn Pop was a real person. That's all I can say. The moment we learned that that Corn Pop wasn't just an... You know, that it was actually a person.
Yeah, was
the
it just
world
a acid reflux memory generated
I was
by
like,
Joe Biden.
Corn Pop.
Yeah.
And then he's
then
real.
Then you're suddenly
Thank
like,
God.
I can see this guy having the nuclear codes. If we
Honestly,
can find them where
as-
they're you know that Trump, like Barron, is playing with the nuclear codes up in the White House bedroom or something.
Yeah, you're not allowed to talk about Barron.
Okay.
Ever.
And it's Barron with two R's, right? That's the last I'll say about it.
I have no idea, but you get very big trouble from talking about
it. Can we talk like your grandfather, Howard Fast? And
yes.
I'm sorry, because this, and I realize like the kids, you know,
communist.
The kids under 55 don't give a shit about
them.
This. He was a huge, huge figure in American kind of popular
really famous,
writing and whatnot.
Yeah.
April Morning, I think, is Spartacus. Well, and also Spartacus.
Yeah.
Did he do the immigrants?
Yeah.
As well.
He did yeah. The which.
But you know.
And he hated Kurt Douglas.
Oh really? Why?
Hate it.
Because Kirk Douglas is a big I mean, he's a liberal.
He was a
he's
big commie.
He's a Hollywood liberal, and so the real commies hated the liberals more than anybody.
Right. Well, yeah. Also the problem was he felt Kurt. So he did Spartacus, and then mm-hmm. Kirk Douglas got more famous than he was, and the thing he really bad, hated yeah. that. And then he would also be like, "There's a really good, hilarious commentary about Spartacus that interviews my grandfather."
Yeah.
And it's brilliantly funny. And he says he was always very mad that actors got more famous than writers.
Right. Yeah.
So he would tell the story of how, like, people thought Kirk Douglas made up those words, but I really made them up.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fair. He was, I mean, the quest for fame, I would just say that people who get famous, not always true, but often yeah. true, are deranged.
They're deranged by the pursuit and achievement of fame.
It's hard to know. But they are. It melds you in such a way yeah. that you are never
that
a normal
you are
person
willing
again.
To accept a peace prize.
No, he liked that part
from Stalin,
but he did write yeah. in his memoir that he didn't yeah. know just how bad it was in Russia, and they kept it from
in 1952 or 53.
He was very aligned yeah. politically with the
yeah, I know, but
the
I mean, even the dumbest commies in America by the late 30s, they were like, okay, if we're going with Stalin, we're doing it despite what we know, what a monster we know him to be.
Listen,
the God had already
better
failed.
Than Hitler.
I don't know. You know, that's I mean, different than Hitler. Hitler killed more people than Hitler.
Right.
You know, internally, and ask the Ukrainians.
Right. Not
about
better than
it,
but, Hitler, but
would your
slightly...
grandfather have liked Cory?
Cory Booker, yes.
Yeah, Cory Booker saying, hey, I'm Spartacus here.
No, he would have liked
because
that.
Because I'm revealing a bunch of things that were public knowledge like a year ago.
He would have liked that because yeah. anything that plugs the book is good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, there
so he would have been like very, yeah, you know, yeah, all of a sudden. Yeah. Actually, what would have been interesting is he probably would have been for Bernie and then had seen Cory Booker give that Spartacus speech and been like,
yeah, it's like you better start talking about April Morning
right,
pretty quickly.
Right,
April
right.
Mourn, yeah. Bernie, or get the fuck out.
Right, exactly. So I think
okay,
that's
so
true.
So now let's go in a kind of diversionary way,
yes,
digressive way. From you don't think impeachment is going to remove Trump, but you think it'll help senators or you know down ticket people.
And it may actually. I think we have a situation which is like the Kavanaugh hearings,
mm-hmm.
where they happened and everyone was like, oh, "See," there was yeah. a lot of like right wing media saying, "Oh, they've blown their chance. Yeah. They never should have." Pushed Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. It's made Republicans so angry that they're yeah. now all going to vote for these insane midterm people, and none of them won.
Yeah.
So, and I do think ultimately.
So you're saying all of the Republicans who won in the midterms are okay by you because they're not the insane ones, the mad ones, the Jack Kerouac Republicans who are exploding across the universe.
The Republicans who won in the midterms, they were largely yeah. the will of their districts, but. Mm. I don't, they were, you know, most of those sort of flip districts went yeah. to Democrats.
So let's talk about the Democratic Party presidential candidates. And, you know, you, I believe, had started off as a big Mayor Pete fan.
Well, I knew him. I knew him a little
well,
bit.
Maybe did he have a contract with with McKinsey, perhaps helping straighten out your children or something like that?
No,
bringing
I
them
knew,
up to code?
I knew him a little bit.
Yeah.
I've been really careful to try to stay okay. out of the Democratic.
Democratic
primary.
Okay, why? Why is that? Because you want any Democrat
well,
over
I just,
any Republican.
I just feel like there's so much. Well, yeah. I mean, it's not any Republican. It's Donald Trump. Like,
okay.
if it were Mitt Romney, I think we'd be having a very different calculus.
Seriously. You would would vote for Mitt Romney over any of the straggling Democratic candidates?
I wouldn't necessarily, but it wouldn't be the same kind of urgency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't love Mitt Romney, but I don't think Mitt Romney is like taking apart democracy.
Mitt Romney's going to have a big vote that he's got to cast, right?
Yeah, well, I think we know how this is
going to go.
This
is like being a senator is like going into the witness protection program. Like nobody knows who the hell is in it anymore. It's like you could just hang out there.
Did you ever see Mitt Romney had that birthday cake and he couldn't figure out how to blow out the candles or he had some that was last year's thing. I mean, he's a very strange guy. And then remember he put the dog on the roof?
Sure.
I mean,
that made me love him. That made me consider him briefly before, like, no, I'm going with the Libertarian.
Who was the Libertarian candidate that
I think it was Gary Johnson.
Yeah, Aleppo. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, Mr. Aleppo. Hey,
oh, he's
you know what?
Run like, every year?
I want to tell no, he did in 2012 and 2016. We would benefit greatly from having a president who didn't know where Aleppo was.
I think
we
have one now.
Because then we wouldn't be bombing it and droning it and raiding it. No, but it's like Gary, and Gary understood what, you know, he muffed that, but his heart and mind was in the right place.
I mean, I agree with a lot of...
It's time to bring the drones home. You know, forget about the troops.
Well, woke teenage son says that he feels that I'm insufficiently liberal. And that my maxim is more female drone pilots.
Oh, okay, yeah. And you are, I mean, this is interesting to think about. You know, and I want to talk about this, but you've been a novelist and a memoirist. You, over the past couple of years, you've really been flourishing as a political writer. And you're writing at all of these places that, or not all of these places, but the Bulwark is like, you know, where the neocons get put out to pasture.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's like maybe you like Hillary Clinton, you want to bomb a lot of Eastern Arab countries.
I really, what was the question there?
I'm not sure. I'm trying to work a line back to the Stalin peace prize. All roads lead to Vladivostok, you know, and the Finland station.
I do not believe in bombing country. I don't believe in nation building or any of that. I'm not into regime
I don't believe in nation building in America, but I especially don't believe in it overseas.
We're not. So,
yeah. Okay.
And I don't believe in regime change in China. That was a brilliant troll on the part of Bill Kristol. No, I think I have some very libertarian views. I really align with Elizabeth Nolan Brown on like all the sex work stuff, decriminalizing that, making it so women can earn their own money.
Now, does that mean they get lower credit card transaction fees?
Yes.
And it's not a level playing field. It's tipped in their favor.
Honestly, I have to say, like, when we have this, you know, right, Republicans have embraced socialism with the farm bailouts.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of me feels like,
and Medicare.
Right. And I remember whatever gets people, you know, to vote for them. But I remember 2008 with the credit crisis where we bailed out the fucking investment bankers because God forbid they wouldn't have summer houses in the Hamptons.
That was, you know, Obama and McCain were basically on the same plane flying back to D.C.
Right, and that plane was a plane of idiocy.
Yeah.
I mean,
now I see why you make a living with words.
I can't tell if he's being ironic or not, ladies and gentlemen. But
The Dave Coulier of podcasts.
I don't even know who Dave Coulier is.
Okay, never. That was like the ligaments of that joke died before on the operating table.
But what I was going to say was, we did bailouts for bankers.
Yeah.
But not for, like, if we're going to bail stuff out, let's bail out newspapers. Like,
why?
I'm saying we shouldn't bail anyone out, but I'm just saying if we're going to bail
out. That's the libertarian.
Right. If we're going to bail out struggling industries, bankers should not, people who don't do anything.
So let's bail out the sex work industry.
Honestly,
because that can be offshore.
I'd rather bail out sex workers than bankers because at least they provide a service.
That's right. Yeah.
And you know,
they keep I don't know.
Lose my own money.
With online banking, you know, they're open 24/7.
But I'm saying sex workers are actually, I would prefer to bail them out. Continue. The presidential.
So the Democratic presidential candidates,
we're
down
to
like, you know, six or seven or whatever.
Six or five, yeah.
Or at least that can make debates on a regular basis. Like, you won't say, no, I'm rooting for Joe Biden, or I'm rooting for Bernie, or
I'm trying really hard not to get involved in it, just because.
What are you, the New York Times?
My endorsement is so important. No, I'm just kidding. I thought I'd reveal it on my television show.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay,
next week.
Okay,
no.
All right.
I don't think I have such great insights into Democratic.
So, but do you think any of them can beat Donald Trump at this point? I mean, you know, he's going to beat impeachment. It might be like an Obama situation where the party around him collapses. They lose a lot of seats. But, you know, he just at Davos speaking about how, you know, America is winning again. We're sick and tired of winning.
His speeches are so bad. I mean, the thing I'm always impressed with is how bad his speeches are, except that one speech, that insane speech we heard ago at CPAC.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
he was, they're just 3 hours long.
Oh, that was great. Where he was talking about the new Green
fire
Deal.
Like, and they're brimstone, they're going to take away your hamburgers.
Yeah, they're you know, taking trains to Hawaii. Good luck with that. Yeah.
I want to take a train to Hawaii.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think with him, the question is, I think for Democrats winning back the Senate, if they win the Senate and the House,
mm-hmm.
it almost, I mean, obviously they have to win the presidency, but Trump is absolutely stuck because he is not a legislator.
What is he doing that particularly on a policy front that particularly chaps your hide?
I mean, there are so many different weird little things like this. I mean, here's a dumb but very small example. He took the vegetables out of the school lunches and said they could be more potato. I mean, it's just like a dumb. He does a lot of these sort of dumb, small reversals. It
so
was killing Soleimani.
Finally, children would enjoy their school lunch.
There's
before
killings.
They go back to their hovels where they're now working in sex workshops because the economy is so
no,
bad.
But I
and
also
the gig economy and Trump.
All
and
right,
offshore.
I would say there. I would say, I think fundamentally. I mean, so there are a lot of like little legislations I could complain about, but I would say, I mean, remember Mitch McConnell? There are 400 bills that Congress has passed that Mitch McConnell won't look at. So I don't know how much actual legislating is getting done as opposed to just these. You know, president, you know, these sort of proclamations
well,
and these executive orders.
You know, the U.S. Mexican.
Right. They redid NAFTA.
Yeah,
it's NAFTA, but a Trump done now.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Bad Boys, third Bad Boys movie coming out. Like, yeah.
Well, and
yeah.
then they're redoing the China thing.
Yeah, no,
and
they got some concessions that may or may not matter. Yeah.
And they're not, but so
but you're
which
not,
is
are you
too
a
late
free
for
trader?
The soybean. Yes.
Are you a free trader?
I am a free trader.
So because most liberals are not.
No,
yeah,
I'm
not
absolutely
so good
a free,
on free
trader. I mean,
but,
I feel like, so, why would you?
Don't you see that this is like, if you can't come up with, here are like the five big things that Donald Trump is screwing up. I don't, you know, and again, the Republicans
trade.
Yeah.
The environment.
But Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are absolutely, you know, their big critique of Trump is like, oh, he'll end tariffs if China caves. They're like, we're never ending tariffs.
They should end tariffs tomorrow.
Yeah. But, I, you know, it's, I mean.
Trade in the environment, because that, I think, is a ticking time bomb. And that has to be figured out. The, like, disease.
Like what?
Like
what? What's that?
That needs. Admissions need to be cut. Paris Climate Accord needs to be rejoined. I know you don't love this stuff.
No,
but
I mean, the Paris isn't going to do anything. And America
but also,
is producing less greenhouse gases than it was
but
20 years ago.
Right, but...
Because of fracking, which all the Democrats would say no to.
Yeah, fracking is not great. But nuclear...
Yeah.
Don't get me started on nuclear.
All right.
But I would say, I would also say there are easier... There are ways to get China to cooperate.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump is not going to be able to do any of those.
Okay.
And I would say also the other thing is with the climate stuff, they need to get their shit together. And that means, you know, the largest polluters in America are like Exxon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Exxon is, so there are certain ways in which.
Well, it's people, right? I mean,
Exxon.
But Exxon isn't saying, you know what, like, you know, the environment seems to be getting a little bit better. Let's just dump a bunch of shit places. It's people use energy.
Right.
In order to do stuff, so
no, but it's really like, you know, oil spills.
Next,
and...
you're going to be blaming the pharmaceutical companies for the opioid crisis.
No, I'm not.
Those people just want.
I'm not. Would you stop it? I would say. So no, I think there. Are,
yeah.
But I think with Trump, the real problem is not what he's doing, but what he's not doing.
Okay.
I mean, that's not true. What he's doing, the stuff with the jailing the children and the you know, tear gas
at
the border.
Come on, if you're a parent, you know, part of you is like, yeah, I wish I had thought
of that. No, that stuff is really bad.
Yeah.
But, and inexcusable, and the, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there. That is a whole package of different, like, anti-immigrant stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, for me, immigration is the big issue.
Right, because immigrant, I mean.
But again, it's not clear what.
And Americans are not doing it. You know, they're not hitting the replacement rate.
Oh,
so,
yeah. No, of course.
Right.
No, so, but I'm not sure that the Democrats are going to be that much better. I mean, I don't think they'll be quite as bad, but Obama was bad on immigration.
Was bad on immigration.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. But I was going to say that some of what the problem is that there are certain places like Michigan and Wisconsin and where those places,
Places are so bad. I hear that Democratic presidential candidates don't even go to places like Wisconsin anymore. It's like a no-go zone.
But I was going to say they don't. There needs to be like an answer to automation, to losing all those factories, to like what people are going to do in those areas that was never answered. Like Trump had said, I'm going to bring back coal, which wasn't a viable option. But these people are dying of diseases of despair.
Yeah.
And that needs to be, but opioids and suicide.
Yeah.
And that you can't just have a part of the population just dying off because there's no sustainable way for them to survive. Like the president needs to deal with that. And I think, I mean, Democrats, you're going to hate this, but. And I'm not saying that Democrats are geniuses by any stretch of the imagination, but they had a WPO or a kind of WPA idea of like, and I think there's an idea there where you get, because people are living so much older, living to be longer and are retiring, you know, they retire at 60 and live for another 30 years.
Or
which is
they
insane.
Retire later, actually, because work is easier and it's kind of a source of identity and value.
But you know, we have all these old people now.
Right.
So
we do. I know. I'm one of them.
But the idea of putting people to work.
So you'll be happy to suit your kids up and send them off into the interior.
Yes.
To take care
mandatory
of
public service.
Clean bedpans.
Yes.
For a bunch of people who were too stupid
in Michigan
to leave like Ohio when all the jobs left.
Mandatory public service. A year of mandatory.
So that's a Buttigieg. No. Buttigieg. Are you in favor of mandatory national service?
I think that might be a good thing.
Really?
Okay. I wouldn't say I know
you
it's
are
the
your
thing
grandfather's
you hate. I think
granddaughter.
It's the thing you hate the most, but I think the idea of a year before college where kids have to do something. Can you imagine?
Because Lord knows they're not going to do anything in college, but
I
think that might be wise, but I cannot
of cleaning parks.
I cannot imagine a world in, I mean, I like to think about
it's
it.
Like the
all
draft,
of my all of my
worse.
Grandparents left Europe in the early mid
1910s because of mandatory
to
military.
Escape. Yeah, well, and I mean there it was just like, okay, World War I's coming, so we're going to put you guys, because they were all like peasants and serfs.
Right.
Here, why don't you catch a couple of bullets while we
while
we exchange Christmas
gifts. Well, Israel
too,
yeah.
No, it's awful. It's like, it's so un-American.
It is very un-American.
Having said all, but.
There's something interesting about the idea of a year of mandatory public service, especially I don't know.
Mandatory, that's like.
But you can't, the whole idea is that you have to do it. You can't get out of it. That's
a
great
equalizer.
Yeah, well,
it's never like that, though.
It's
never
like
that. You know, and it's like if you're LBJ during World War II, you pull strings to get a desk job.
Coast Guard.
You know, and stuff.
Yeah.
So, but you're not confident that the Democrats, any of the candidates that are out there, can beat Donald Trump.
No, I am. Here's the thing. I think it's possible that, I actually think it's, and I mean, if you look at the polling, and again, who knows? But I do think it's possible that a Democrat could beat Donald Trump. I don't know that it will happen, but I think it's possible. I mean, again, Democrats are their own worst enemies, right? We've seen this again
but
and again.
But is it because they're petty? And I mean, you're seeing this now. No, like, you know, the kind of fights among the three leaders, Elizabeth Warren, Biden, and Sanders, all sniping at each other. Is it like that? Or is it that the vision that they put forth, and I'm not saying this out of ideology, of just like when Elizabeth Warren starts to talk about all of the shit that government is going to do, like most people are kind of like, hey, you know what, like pull back a little bit. And Sanders is even worse. And then Biden is kind of like, Biden is talking about doubling compared to what Hillary Clinton said she was going to raise taxes. He's offering double that. And it's just, he's not particularly Mr. Competency either. So you're, you know, Trump, you know, we're spending more money under Trump than we ever have under anybody else. But he at least says, like, I'm not going to really make you do
his
shit.
His messaging is much better than Democrats. Yeah. And that's always true. I mean, Democrats are never good at messaging. I would say the thing about the problem with the Democratic Party is that because there are many more Democrats, it's much more of a big tent party. And so, And also, again, it's that old adage that Democrats fall in love and Republicans fall in line. So Democrats are like, do I want to have a beer with him?
Yeah.
And Republicans are like, well, he's an orange-colored autocrat who likely gets help from Russia, but he's our autocrat.
Right.
And like, you would never see Democrats support a Democrat the way Republicans have supported Trump. And
so that's why Hillary Clinton couldn't drag it across the finish line.
Right. No question. Well, I mean, among other things, but yes.
She deserved to lose, don't you think?
I'm not going to answer that.
Why not?
Because I first of all, is someone deserved to lose? I have no idea what deserved to lose even means, but
she took her election for granted, didn't even visit Wisconsin once, spent a lot of time raising money in California so she'd have a big war chest to spend after she was president.
Mistakes were undoubtable. I think that there's not a person in this world who wouldn't say that is a campaign that can be studied for what not to do.
Yeah.
Oh, no question. Now, you know, the question of whether she deserved what she deserved, I can't even speak to.
What do you think of people like, because you call yourself a kind of a liberal and a Democrat. What do you think of people like AOC, you know, the Democratic Socialist kind of wing of the Democratic Party?
So I don't have like
the daughter. Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking to the daughter of a winner, a granddaughter of
a big communist.
Yes, a major award-winning communist.
I like AOC.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, I like Bernie. I think there's a lot of good
Do you really think like spending trillions of dollars on new government programs that would, you know, retrofit, you know, put weather stripping in houses and like dictate every aspect of your life. You're like, oh yeah, that sounds great.
Well, the question,
and it's even better that she's like 30 and, you know, says we only have 12 years left to live. You know,
I mean, like, the question is this. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of so much regulation, but Trump has gotten rid of all the regulation that I like. You know, all the environmental regulation, all the banking regulation that was necessary,
banking regulation that led to the financial collapse bankers knew they would be bailed out, and now they're definitely going to be bailed out.
Yeah, but there was banking regulations that were put in after 2008 that were smart regulations that now Trump is gutting. I mean, I know you're not for regulation.
Yeah, no,
I don't buy that because
I think that
there's a certain amount of regulations that have to exist. So
I agree. I don't have a problem with that. I just think this
is airplanes, your food. But Trump is taking away these regulations about pork. I mean, like I don't know if you read The Jungle, but that's happening.
The unintended consequences of The Jungle was to further centralize the meatpacking industry and create a whole bunch of other problems.
We don't have to worry about pork when you eat a hot dog.
I live a couple blocks from Whole Foods. Whole Foods, without government oversight, they are stricter on their suppliers than anybody. I'm not going to get into it. USDA is like, we can probably do without it.
I mean, okay, here's my question for you, though. Then that's really a sort of wealthy person's view of the world, right? Because Flint, Michigan would have liked more regulation.
Wait, they had government regulation up the yin-yang, and there was a city council there that signed off on that deal. It wasn't like that was a government operation.
But they weren't testing the water. And I've heard those activists talk, and, you know, the woman tells the story of sitting in her kitchen. She watches her son. He falls off the swing set. She takes him to the hospital. His arm is completely shattered. And this has happened to us 5 times in the last week. So I'm just saying.
The government should be in control of the economy, right?
It's some regulation is good and some regulation is bad and some regulation is happening.
There's nothing that Trump did or could do that would save Flint, Michigan. That was
awful. And also the papes.
It wasn't a Republican or a Democrat thing. There was plenty of blame to go
around. Well, the governor covered it up.
Yeah, but the city council was like in the hands.
Everybody fucked up. Yeah. And there was lead in the pipes that they couldn't you couldn't blame one person for Flint. You can blame a lot of people for Flint.
Right.
But the thing I was going to say about government regulation, which I do think is really necessary, is when you look at Trump, he is the definition of crony capitalism, right? You have this guy who says, you know, Eric's friend's company can, the Whitefish Montana electric company can have the contracts in Puerto Rico, even though they employ two people, you know? And so as someone who actually really does believe in free markets and really does believe that capitalism can be a force for good, because I mean, I'm married to someone who's a venture capitalist. So I believe that capitalism can be a force for good? Absolutely. Do I believe unchecked capitalism can be a force for absolute despair and, you know, 18th century London? You know, no question. And you see with Amazon right now, you know, the corporate tax level is just I like corporations, but they should pay taxes. Like, I'm paying taxes. Why the fuck is Amazon not paying taxes?
Well, they can pay taxes and raise your prices.
Fine. They should be. But
any dollar should be taxed. Well, this,
I mean, but the thing is, Jeff Bezos is the richest man in the world many, many times over because his company doesn't pay taxes. Like,
no, no. He's the richest person
many times
over. And also because
he killed all bookstores.
You remember Borders killed bookstores.
Right.
And Barnes & Noble killed bookstores.
And then they killed themselves.
Amazon came and killed them, and now bookstores are back. The new bookstores are growing because people want the physical experience. These are, you know, this is a cycle of life. And, you know, Jeff Bezos is the richest man in the world because he's produced a company that I just bought. My most recent Amazon purchase is a skin tag remover.
He's not going to give you a deal.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Listen, I'm not saying that Amazon
is a force for good, and all of these big billionaires, even Mike Bloomberg, the Democrat running for the Democratic presidential candidate, billionaire, he's a billionaire because he came up with a service that people want.
No, I agree. Yeah. So, but should Amazon be taxed? Yes.
Yeah.
And
but,
should the people who work in the Amazon factories be, you know, made? Should they be brought to those factories, be brought to certain standards? Should people peeing in the garbage cans?
This is the biggest fraud of, like, there's like a handful of anecdotes of people saying, oh, I wear adult diapers because I don't get bathroom breaks. And yet every time Amazon opens up a plant, they have like thousands of people applying for jobs.
This isn't
Gin Lane or Dickens, London or something like that. It's not, we have 3% unemployment. We don't have a reserve army of the unemployed.
But you can't say we have 3% unemployment because you have to talk about the people who've gone off the rolls.
Yeah, no, I get all of that. I'm just saying relative to all of this stuff. Yeah. And it's like, and I've worked at factory jobs, I hope never to have to again. And this is why I kind of support automation, because when I get canned from Reason, I'll be, you know, working at Amazon. But
I don't think that I agree and I support some. I support automation. Yes.
Yeah.
It's crazy to be against progress.
Right.
But you have to find something for those people to do.
Sure.
And there are needs like daycare and old people.
Oh, I agree.
And, you know,
I just said
there have been times in this country when the government has said, like, you go build train tracks. And that has
to prison laborers or to Chinese coolies and Irish immigrants.
No, I'm talking about like.
The
like
government didn't
in the,
do that anyway, in the private business.
Right, but in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
But listen, I'm not saying that the government should. I feel like I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for this.
I don't know. Your PC police friends are going to be canceling you for saying, hey, maybe the government shouldn't be doing everything.
Oh, you're infuriating in a way that someone who I don't know would be less infuriating. But I think the government can be a source for good. And I do not think the government under Donald Trump is a source for good.
Okay.
Except for Junior.
I think we kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
No, and this is good because, if we keep Trump Jr. in the private sector,
we might be able to reform government.
Yeah.
Right. We must keep Trump Jr.
But is it safe to say just a lot of your politics are I don't mean this in a bad way. Uh-uh. I mean, it's like, no, it's like temperamental or attitudinal, that it's like kind of less about what's going on and how it's being done.
No, I believe in certain freedoms, and mm-hmm. I think that the government is not, I think the government can be a source of good in the mm-hmm. world. I think sometimes the government is not savvy.
Right.
Which I think it's hard to argue with that. And so I think sometimes it gets very stuck on bad, it does bad regulation sometimes. Like right. I'm very for school choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to me like an obvious yeah. one.
Would you be, and I'm using you as kind of a canary in the coal mine or something, of like, do you feel like, you know, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party certainly, but like they're not really quite speaking to where people are anymore? Because there's probably a lot of people like you who are, you know, actually pro-capitalism.
Right.
Pro school choice, pro reproductive choice.
Yeah.
You know, et cetera. Like, and actually there's it, you know, like you can't be like, if you believe in school choice and abortion, you basically can't have you can't be a Republican or a Democrat, because Republicans tend to support school choice, but they're against abortion. Yeah. And Democrats tend to be against school choice, but they're for abortion. And it's like, what if I'm both? And then you yeah. throw on, you know, and maybe I'm like, you know, I'm free trade, because free trade has gone missing on both the Republican and the Democratic side. Yeah.
Free trade is like the one thing yeah. that actually makes sense.
Yeah.
Like,
but not anymore. Yeah.
Free trade makes me crazy. No, I think there's a place. I think the Democratic Party is big enough so that mm-hmm. there's a place for all of that there, because mm-hmm. There are a lot more Democrats and Republicans. Would it be nice if there were a party that were just sort of pragmatic? Yes. No. That were like, this is what we can get done.
Right.
Right. This is.
So
I
it's
mean,
drag time, story hour, free trade, school choice.
Well, what I'm saying order. Is yeah. that. A good example is this. I mean, I'm sure you hate mm-hmm. her, but I actually really like her. Is Gina Raimondo.
There are parts of Gina Raimondo that are great. She right. saved them as treasurer. She saved their pensions.
Right. She saved their yeah. pensions. And she also
pretty good fiscal
has
conservative.
Free college now.
Yeah, that if I'm not a big fan of.
If you live in Rhode Island, you can have free college right. and free pre-K.
Right.
Like, those are things that actually will absolutely move the needle.
Right.
Like, if people can go to college for free, and even with Pell Grants, I mean, yeah. a little story here. Which
named after Claiborne Pell, by the way, the senator from Rhode Island.
A little story that will annoy you to no end.
Okay.
One of my best friends from growing up went and lived in Florida and was a college counselor and went to a very poor school in mm-hmm. Florida. And she was able, because she knew about Pell Grants,
right.
she got all of her kids. You know, yeah. if you apply to Pell Grants, you can get a Pell Grant, but
right.
you have to know how to apply,
right.
which is a government thing with a
yeah,
lot
yeah.
of forms.
Right.
But so she got all her kids Pell Grants, like all the kids.
Yeah.
So they had a 98% Pell Grant. You know?
Right, right.
And so a lot of kids went to college for free. And Obama came to her school because mm-hmm. it was such a big deal. And congratulated her on getting all these Pell Grants.
Wow.
And so there is a way. I mean, there are so many things in this government where, like, there should be, people should be, you know, there, it should be easy to figure out how to get a Pell Grant. It should not.
It is pretty easy.
But
these
you
days.
Should.
I say that as somebody who sent a kid, two
right.
kids to college recently.
Right. But you should have, but school should, if people
yeah.
should, people should be able to go to college. If they can get into college, and they cannot afford it, they should be able to go.
I don't know that the government should be mandating
but,
that for a wide variety of reasons. The one thing I will say, though, what is good is that actually we live in a world now where more people go to college than ever before. And most of the time when people drop out, that it isn't because of cost. It's other things. And it's also true that some people are not going to finish college or don't want to go to college, and they shouldn't be penalized.
No, but know? If they want, if you are an ambitious
but
student.
But this is like in New York City, if you want to, you can go to a CUNY college, which, and they have
right.
many, many good schools
yeah.
essentially for free.
And
you can go to SUNY.
They're not free though. They're like,
no.
A couple $1,000.
No, and you will get financial aid to cover
right.
that if you're
right.
poor.
But so. I do think that more, like, we should have, it should be set up that if you're an ambitious mm-hmm. person who wants, and the thing I was going to say about the colleges was a lot of these colleges have these enormous endowments.
Yeah.
Enormous.
Right. Right.
And for example, like certain colleges like Harvard, Princeton, Yale, mm-hmm. and a lot of other these like big Ivy League colleges, if you can get in, you can go.
Right.
Like,
but they also, I mean, those are also the New York Times has a great database of the number, you know, where you can track how many people from what income quintile
right.
attend there. And it's like Harvard can foot the bill for anybody who
right.
gets in. And they, you know, like everybody there is from the top 10 or 15% of the income distribution.
Well, they're trying to get better about that.
Yeah, they're
and
not. They're
but
not.
They should.
I mean, but they're not going to, because the function of going to a school like Harvard isn't about education. It's about, and here I sound like your
right.
grandfather being a Marxist, you know, it's to replicate the existing class structure. It's not
but
to actually shake things up.
I would argue that a Harvard, that Harvard wants, that actually Harvard should want the kids that have, because like with my work with Arena, mm-hmm. when I was involved with Arena, I'm less involved now, but
mm-hmm.
we would find these kids
yeah.
who were like activists who had been, for example, there's one girl who's at Columbia now where she was homeless and sleeping mm-hmm. in her car, and she got into Columbia and she's incredible and she's an activist and she's amazing.
Yeah.
And so that kid, there's no world in which that kid isn't going to do more than, you know,
sure.
Buffy the Third. And
that's like a private program, though, right? To get that kid. I mean, I think this stuff is happening.
Right. I think it's happening. It's not happening as much as it should.
Live...
But those kids are the kids. Even if, yeah. by the way, if that kid, even if that kid goes to a state school, that kid is more likely to succeed.
So you're telling me that a kid, an ambitious kid who doesn't have a lot of book learning, but, you know, has street smarts, is going to do better and do more with a degree than, say, like Hunter Biden or
oh,
Eric
Jesus
Trump.
Christ.
I think I tend to agree with that. Although I'm not
fair.
Sure. I'm not sure about
that. I mean, I think that those kids had book smart. I mean,
yeah.
that kid did really well.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say a kid who can do well in college
right.
with adversity,
yes.
too, is incredible. I mean, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how we got on this on the first day of the Trump
sorry.
Impeachment trial. But
well,
I agree with, I think it was Jack Kemp who used to talk about the Opportunity Society?
Right.
You know, that, I mean, you know, part
there's,
of the American dream, and I
is that,
unlike a
right.
lot of my libertarian brethren, I believe government has a role to play in this, is that, you know, we should be creating systems and institutions, mostly private included, but some
right.
public, you know, that allow people to actualize themselves as much as possible.
If private institutions, and I,
yeah.
you know, I have a lot of good feelings about charter schools.
Mm-hmm.
If we can find private institutions that are, I mean, the sweet spot, like the best,
yeah.
is when you can find private institutions that can work with the government. In a thoughtful way.
Yeah, I always wonder, I always worry that, you know, that's
just
a form of cronyism, even in the philanthropic, right? Where like the private institutions get corrupted from their missions and the public institutions start changing things to placate.
I mean,
not sure about
it. It can be problematic, but I do think like if you look at, a good example of this, and everyone's going to get mad at me because
okay.
this is like the opposite of libertarianism, but Bloomberg.
Yeah.
would just pay for the stuff that
right.
the city couldn't afford.
Yeah.
Right. And
so we need more plutocrats.
No, that is
Jeff
not.
Jeff Bezos should
no,
be running for president.
But they are, like, it is, if you're going to have a culture with billionaires,
yeah.
which I'm not saying you should, I'm not taking
hey,
it.
Yeah, this is the Reason interview. It's not AOC cancel all billionaires.
Well, I'm just saying.
We need more billionaires.
Well, I'm just saying. If you're going to have those
yeah.
people, they need, like, Jeff Bezos has done an amazing thing with the Washington Post. Like,
yeah, sure.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And if you have people who are committed to keeping newspapers alive.
Right. Like Sheldon Adelson with the Las Vegas paper,
stop
right?
It.
Yeah.
Nobody in the world is going, no, as a liberal Jew, the last person I will ever celebrate is Sheldon Adelson. I mean, that picture of him in that Trump yarmulke, like, it haunts me. It makes me want to convert.
Yeah.
That is not the kind
so
of Jew I am, let me
tell
you.
Let's talk very quickly, because we're going to run out of time.
You want to
you know,
ask
because,
me more
well,
incredibly
No, you know, here, let me ask you this. So
yes.
what's the appeal to you of politics, of writing about politics, as opposed to fiction and memoir? And I mean, it's really, and you come from a very literary family.
Yeah.
Both your father and your mother, and of course your grandfather, the winner of, what was it, the Lenin Peace Prize? No, it was the Stalin Peace Prize. Joe Stalin, I think his first name was. Joe Stalin. Yeah, he was a very peaceful man. What's the appeal?
Ask me again about the Stalin Peace Prize.
What is the appeal? Well, you know, your T-shirt says that on
That's
it.
Right.
So it's like,
Stalin had some good ideas.
Yeah. What, you know, how, it, do you feel like political commentary as well as social media, because this is also independent of, you know, your anybody's ideology or anything. I mean, you have a really commanding presence on Twitter. What do you have, like a couple hundred thousand?
400,000
Twitter followers.
Yeah.
And on Instagram, you're a behemoth as
well.
No,
not as many.
But I mean, you're
14,000.
Yeah, but that's pretty gigantic. You know, what is it about politics and what is it about new media that you find particularly exciting?
Well, new media is amazing. Yeah. I think social media is amazing. And what it is there's no barrier to entry for your thoughts.
Right.
Like it used to be you'd write an op-ed and your editor would look at it and say, this is bad, this is good, we're going to run this, we're not. But with Twitter and Instagram, you know, you have a thought, you can just do it, which is incredible. And it's some, so I like that. I love people being able to contact me. Like, I love that. I don't think you should do Twitter if you don't have open DMs.
Yeah.
And I also don't think you should do Twitter if you think you're better than Twitter. Like, you know, those people who are like, oh, it's terrible, but I do it anyway. Like,
I have to, because otherwise, what?
Right. Otherwise, nobody would give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, if you do Twitter, you have to do it because you love it.
Yeah.
Like, you love the people, you love the strange discourse.
Yeah.
Like, I love it. I find it to be, first of all, I love the people on it. They're strange, they're interesting, they're smart, they're always on there, they're always engaging.
Yeah.
So I love that. I like that you can talk to, you know, you can fight with Glenn Greenwald.
Mm-hmm.
You can do this, you can do that. I find it to be fascinating.
Yeah.
I like that people can, I wrote an interview about someone and like I got 50 comments from people being like, this is a real story.
Oh, yeah.
And it was fascinating. Like, yeah. I like, you know, I came from a very sheltered upbringing, even though they were interesting and bohemian, it was very sheltered.
Right.
And I didn't meet people I didn't meet people who weren't people I would know.
Right. And this is kind of like a New York upper, it's not even
Uptown.
Upper East Side, but it's
but
it's like a very rarefied environment.
So
there aren't that many people in it, to be honest.
Right, exactly. And a lot of them are pretty dumb, let's be honest. So what I love about the internet, and I actually love the internet from as soon as it started, was you can talk to anyone you want. Like people DM me all the time and I'm never like, where'd you go to college?
Right.
Like, what clubs are you a member of? No, yeah. I'm curious to know what they want to talk to me about.
So it really is this kind of flattening of status.
I love that.
Like the creator, the priest, up at the top of the temple from the congregation. It brings everybody down into same mosh pit.
Well, the thing I hate, the thing that I feel like is what you shouldn't have it, if you're not going to willing to follow a lot of people back, like those people who have like two followers, like follow two people, fuck you. Like, you're so great. Yeah. You know, Rod Rosenstein, who turns out to be the villain of this whole fucking thing, follows zero people.
Yeah.
Like, if ever there were proof, and then you have to have open DMs because people have to be able to DM you.
Yeah.
You can block people. I think blocking people is fine. I had to block a lot of people because a lot of people hate me. But it's also just interesting. And you get to see, you get to workshop ideas. You get to see what people think is really stupid.
Right.
You get to sort of fail in public. It is fascinating. I think it's great.
I love that as a kind of metaphor for a new, the world that we're moving towards. And I realize, we have profound political differences, our ideological differences. But like, I see that writ large, before the internet, but it's, that power is dispersing and decentralizing and that old forms of status matter less.
Well, yeah.
Even as people in those old forms get richer and richer and all of that. But like even, the New York Times, going back to their double endorsement, like we are serious and we're going to tell you who to vote for, who we think you should vote for. And then they can't even come up with a single person. They're a decaying institution in terms of the influence. Like the New York Times can no longer open or close movies and theaters, or,
dramas. Well, newspaper endorsements. Yeah. I mean, we saw that in 2016, like one newspaper endorsed Trump and it didn't matter.
It turned out it was the right one.
Right.
Yeah.
Sheldon, it turned out it was owned by Sheldon Adelson.
Or whatever.
Yeah, surprising.
But Yeah, I mean, I think that like what you're talking, the way you talk about Twitter, that is replicated in so many parts of the world now.
I love that. I mean, yeah. That is the greatest thing.
And I want a politics that matches that.
No, I agree. Yeah. And that's why I wonder, and you're going to hate this, but sure. I feel open to the idea of a coalition government.
Yeah.
Because I just don't think, I think America, like, the truth is the Democratic Party is not, it's crazy to have a Democratic Party that's both Joe Biden and Bernie. Like, they're totally different sides of the same coin.
Now, one of them is a really old kind of heart attack victim, you know, from Brooklyn and now Vermont. And the other one is brain dead guy from Pennsylvania and now Delaware. Totally different.
They're
like right and left twigs.
I have to say, as a Jew, there's a part of me that the idea that they would ever elect a Jewish guy that looks like all my relatives is kind of exciting. Like,
oh, really? Oh,
yeah, there's a little.
You're not a real Jew. A real Jew would be like, and I hate that.
About the birthdays where he was like, I'm not going to call you and wish you happy birthday. Yeah. I was like, I love him. Like, that was the single. I was like,
This is one of the, and I say this as somebody who was raised Catholic, and my father was Irish and my mother was Italian, and they were like very Catholic. I was raised very Catholic. Biden at various points has tried to channel the Irish Catholic stuff.
Right.
And he's like,
malarkey.
The malarkey. And it's just like, man, that is like, you know, and he also picked a dead identity. Nobody fucking cares about the Kennedys or about Irish Catholics.
Yeah, but nobody cares about the Jews. There are like 11
Jews.
But
you know, like, curb your enthusiasm.
Well,
like Bernie
surrogate now. Yeah. I mean, I thought was sort of impressive.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I have in my mind, I keep thinking, like, we are in such a sort of weird and desperate time in American politics. It is a strange, you know, there is a certain inner Marxist in me who's like, you know, should we just burn it all down?
Yeah.
You know?
An inner Marxist. So you are, you know,
a Marxist,
I'm sure the paternity
socialist.
Is probably all kind of up in the air, but you are your grandfather's
granddaughter. I have to tell you, I was working this grift because Ken Follett is much richer than my family.
Yeah.
And
all
so
right.
I
Ken
had.
Ken Follett, the great author of like massively best-selling thrillers.
Huge best-selling. Man is so, like, that's the business to be in.
What was the big one? The Eagle
Eye
has landed.
Eye of the Needle. So I had said to him, you know, I think you might actually be my real father.
Yeah.
And I would like in on this gravy train. And he was like, I did not meet your mother till 1983. I'm sorry.
Okay. Wow.
And I was like, you're sure? I could be.
There isn't any kind of like residual stuff from some kind of sex swingers party.
I said that to him. I was like, are you sure?
Who are we to judge? So you were promising a Bret Easton Ellis story.
Oh, I'll tell the Bret Easton Ellis story.
Yeah. And let's, we're going to close with that.
Oh, good.
The Bret
Easton Easton Ellis story is I don't know, like a year and a half ago, 6 months ago, I wrote this piece about Bret Easton Ellis. Mm-hmm. I think it was only 6 months ago, but maybe it was more.
No, that sounds about right, yeah.
And I wrote this
and it was
about
his
book,
White.
Yeah, when did White come out?
Like about a year ago,
yes,
less than a year ago. Maybe.
So you and I were having dinner. And you were like, I've read this book, White, and it's amazing.
Interviewed him a couple of years ago.
I loved that book.
I thought White, you know, it's not perfect, but it's a really interesting exploration of where we are.
So I said, I'm not going to read it. I'm going to hate it. I'm not going to read it. I'm going to hate it. And then they sent it to me and I read it and I hated it.
Yeah.
And there was this defense of Candace Owens.
Okay.
That was like that. I don't remember.
She's a fascinating thinker.
I don't remember much about it. But the defense of Candace Owens, I think I was fine maybe until I just at some point I found myself tearing out my hair.
And it's just because you're in a Candace Owens eliminationist.
Right, obviously. Okay. Yeah. No, because there were so many things that I disagreed with. Mm-hmm. But so I wrote a really, really mean piece for the Daily Beast about how just endlessly slandering and trashing the book endlessly. And so I was in LA for Christmas and one of my cousins is a very famous artist. His name is Jordan Wolfson, and he is been in the Biennial and this and that, and he's very he's great, and he is a big environmentalist. But because he lives in LA, he said to me, I was at a party with Bret Easton Ellis, and he has a message for you.
Oh, wow.
So then I got sort of
and terrified. Now, and this is where you're like, okay, less than zero rules of attraction.
He's going to murder me.
Yeah, right? And of yeah. course the big one, American Psycho.
Like, the lesson is ice pick.
Yeah.
No, but.
Chainsaw.
So chainsaw, right, exactly. Yeah, not ice wrap. Pick. That yeah. was yeah. that was whatever it was.
Basic instinct. Yeah. That was a Joe Esterhaus, the great new journalist turned kind of awful screenwriter.
So anyway,
and Clinton, friend, foe.
So anyway, so he said, I have this message from Bretty Salas, and I said, okay. I got a little anxious. Went to dinner with him, and he said, Bretty Salas says he understands what you did, and wishes you well.
Oh, okay. What did that mean?
I was sort of shocked, like yeah. very generous. I thought it was very generous of
what,
him.
But, so what did you do?
I wrote this really mean piece about him.
No, I understand
and
that,
then
was...
Tucker Carlson called me stupid.
Right, okay.
Well, he said not super smart.
Yeah.
So, but I thought that was sort of amazing.
Do you, say, what is your...
Because Bretty Snellis and I were friends.
Yeah.
And he wrote a screenplay of my first book.
Right.
So we had this relationship. And actually then my cousin said, then he started talking about how much he liked my first book.
Yeah.
So this is like a very generous and warm. Yeah. And so then I thought, like...
Have you talked with Bretty Snellis about this?
No. But it was very sort of meaningful. And I, yeah. and there's something lovely about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that it was going to be like you went to a party with Bret Easton Ellis and watched a snuff film. And
no, this is like a nice story.
Yeah.
I know this has caught you very...
The other one's kind of nice.
It caught you up very off guard.
No, I stand by. I think Bret Easton Ellis is doing
essential
work. He's
such a good writer, but
work.
That book is a bad book.
I totally disagree. I think it's an attempt to grapple with a world in which America is no longer the central factor of existence. I love particularly when he talks about the entertainment industry and its inability to kind of understand that, you know, Hollywood, not all film, because right. the most interesting stuff isn't coming out of there. They're handmaidens to the Chinese, government.
Right. I would say this, because he's written some novels that, like Glamorama is one of my favorite novels. I would say this, if he wrote Didion style, like more with more sort of factual stuff and less anecdotal, I think he'd be I think he'd actually thread that needle a lot better. Now, I don't agree with his political views, and I won't ever, but I do think if he could tell the story of Hollywood being beholden to the Chinese, which they obviously are.
Without really understanding it. Acknowledging it. Not acknowledging.
Right. No question. Yeah. But I think if he could make that argument less in an anecdotal way and more in a sort of factual way.
I think he's right. And I lived for a good chunk of time in the Midwest in a small town. And, you know, the derangement that Trump's ascendance has caused is bizarre to me. And it's telling of something. And I don't think Trump is the cause of this stuff. He's the effect. And we need to get to whatever comes after this. And that, it's a Marxist, it's communist,
right.
it's a Stalin thing. No, but it's like, there is, Bush and Obama, thesis, antithesis,
but
synthesis in Trump. And what we need
Bush
to do
and
is
Obama,
to like end it all here and start something completely new.
Bush and Obama were so much more similar.
Yeah.
Than Trump. I mean, it's not even a question.
Yeah,
even
but I mean,
Nixon
he's part. Yeah.
Was so. More similar.
All right. We are going to have to end it here. I have been talking to Molly Jong Fast. I think. Did I pronounce it right?
We've been friends.
Okay. That is the first and possibly the only time I will pronounce her name semi correctly. Molly is an editor at large at The Daily Beast. She also writes for a host of other places. You should check her work out everywhere. And what is your Twitter handle?
It's Molly Jong Fast. Yes.
And what about Instagram?
It's Molly Jong. Oddly.
Oh, yeah?
It's a very and your catchy name is, Molly John Fast.
Your name again is Molly. She has. You may not agree with what she has to say, but I think you will always enjoy the way that it is written. And Molly, thank you so much for talking to The Reason Interview.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. And I look forward to pieces of this being taken out of context.
All right.
Out of context.
You know what? In the work of art, in the age of mechanical reproduction, there is only taking things out
right,
of context.
Right. The hope is,
Free. That is why Twitter is great.
Some sentence people of this to be taken out of context years from now about how I'm a Stalinist. And if only I had... Let's just write. Yeah.
All
I
right.
look forward to
How
it.
Many divisions does she have? We
That's
will
right.
leave it there. This has been The Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. I am Nick Gillespie. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to this podcast at Apple, at Google, at Spotify, at Stitcher, at SoundCloud, or at reason.com/podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, check it out. Please come back.